Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go on a packed Wednesday. This is the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. I'm going to start with the Cowboys, then go to the Rams. Here is Joy Taylor joining me. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, it was going to be kind of a, you know, Wednesdays are the day that's kind of the middle of the week for the NFL. Yeah, it's kind of the slowest day of the week during the NFL season. Mondays, right. Tuesdays, we're talking about Monday Night Football and the games. And Thursday, Friday, got Thursday Night Football and the games coming up and college football. And Wednesday's kind of slow, but no, it's not. So a big trade, but let's start with the Dallas Cowboys. So, listen, Jerry Jones, Jason Garrett, it's heating up. There's a lot of talk now. Jason Garrett doesn't have a contract. And unlike the story that Jerry has offered Dak a new deal, they just haven't agreed on it, he has not offered Jason Garrett a deal. So in Dallas, they're pouncing on it. If they lose Sunday, they're now, you know, a football team that looks like on the out looking in. They have some of the best young talent. So Jerry Jones goes on radio yesterday to make a point of supporting Jason Garrett, his coach, who's now on the hot seat, at least from the media and fans' perspective.
I have felt that we've got a lot invested in Jason Garrett. He's evolved into what I think is a top coach. He would be a very sought-after coach if he were out here in the open market. Everybody's aware that we're on the last year of his agreement, but that really just means that we can all sit down and take a look at things at the end of the year.
Okay, would he be sought after? So let's just start with that. He actually would be. The NFL's got 6 or 7 openings every year. And let's be honest, the best available coach on the market that's actually won divisions is Mike McCarthy, and Green Bay may be better without him. Then you got 4 college coaches whose names are out there. Brian Kelly at Notre Dame, Lincoln Riley, Oklahoma, Matt Rule at Baylor, Matt Campbell at Iowa State. Then you got a couple of young coaches, Eric Bieniemy, Kansas City, Chris Richard, Dallas, who have never been given an opportunity. They will get one. Then 2 guys like Todd Bowles and Mike Pettine, who have been head coaches, failed, but people think they probably deserve a second chance. Jason Garrett fits very nicely into that. There's not a lot of guarantees. I mean, after Mike McCarthy, who could you say, yeah, he's won divisions in the NFL, and nobody out there? I mean, Rex Ryan, you want to go down that nonsense again? Mr. Guaranteed Super Bowl guy? So Jason Garrett would have offers, and there's about 6-7 job openings. We already know Washington's going to look for a coach. Keep your eye on Cleveland, Jacksonville. You know, teams going a 5-game losing streak. Minnesota, Mike Zimmer could be in trouble, and he's a great coach. So I do think on the open market, how many guys can say, oh, he has won the division multiple times. Oh, who was his quarterback? Dak Prescott. That's going to get a job. But I think Jerry already knows who his next coach is. I'm not sure he's ready to hire him, but I know who Jerry's next coach is when he decides to hire him. Maybe this year, it may be 2 years down the road. It's Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma, and there's 2 reasons why I think Lincoln Riley's going to accept it when Jerry offers. Now, I'm not saying he's going to offer it now. There's 2 things happening to think about. Lincoln Riley, first of all, is brilliant. He makes every quarterback work. So just think about these 2 or 3 things. Number 1, he made Baker Mayfield into a star. Jalen Hurts was benched in Alabama. He's a star. Kyler Murray was a baseball guy over a football guy. Made him into a star. Dak Prescott. That'd be a pretty good fit now, wouldn't it? A quarterback who needs another level. Secondly, there's a major burnout factor happening in college football for coaches. It used to be there was a national letter of intent day on February, 5th. Now there's 2 signing dates, meaning college football recruiting is a nonstop job. It used to be you had time off. There were times you didn't recruit. There were big gaps in it. And the feeling was college football life as a coach was better than the NFL life. It was less of a grind. You lived in a small town. You controlled the roster. The media was small market. They weren't banging on you all the time. You got more time off with your wife and kids. It was a great life. It's not as great a life as it used to be. Now they've got 2 signing days, and it's burning out these coaches. Brian Kelly has told people, I can't do this very long. The third factor is Lincoln Riley's had 4 quarterbacks by next year in 4 years. This wacky transfer portal thing empowers the kid. I get it. I'm for it. But it has made the quarterback position, if daddy's not happy and you're not starting, kids are out. It is a nonstop psychoanalyzing therapy sessions for these top college coach, because you have to recruit two quarterbacks a year in case one gets hurt. And immediately one of them's like, well, I'm not going to start. Dad, I don't like it here. Boom, I'm out. So, and it, you know, it empowers the player, and I don't blame the player. But these are the realities of Lincoln Riley. I think he's going to take this job. I just don't know when he's going to take it. And Jerry Jones has had success. Think about this. Every time Jerry's won a Super Bowl, he hired a college coach. He hired Jimmy Johnson. No NFL experience. Won two Super Bowls. Got rid of him. There were other guys out there. He goes, oh, I'm going to go get Barry Switzer. He won a Super Bowl. So Jerry's reality is these college guys work. Jerry played college football. He watches college football. He loves college football. You'll see Jerry on a Saturday at a college football game. So he has a real connection to college football. Lincoln Riley is very much Jimmy Johnson. You know, everybody knew Jimmy Johnson was going to work in the NFL when he was in college. You could just sense it. He was a great personnel guy. Everybody knows Lincoln Riley's going to work in the NFL. Like that's he's not as quirky as Chip Kelly, whereas, you know, his genius will transfer to the NFL. And I think there's a bunch of things working here. Cowboys need a coach who can get more out of Dak. There's a burnout happening with college football coaches and all this recruiting now in the NCAA transfer portal. It is a dance constantly trying to appease your quarterbacks in college football. So I think it's going to happen. I don't know when it's going to happen, but I think Jerry's got his guy. Just like Jerry had his guy when he got took to own the Cowboys, Tom Landry, he had his guy. He had to get Jimmy, but he had his guy. All right, let me shift to this. Yesterday, the Los Angeles Rams did what, since they've moved to Los Angeles, what the Rams do. They gave up a bunch of draft picks to get Jalen Ramsey. First of all, why did they do it? Well, San Francisco's 5-0, Seattle's 5-1, and if the Rams lose this weekend, the season's over. Now, you know, number two is, it made sense. Marcus Peters, they didn't want him in the room anymore. He's not a great guy. They got him out of the room, and Aqib Talib got hurt. They needed a corner. So a lot of it just makes sense. But the other part of this is Los Angeles is different. Its relevance matters a lot in New York and Los Angeles. There's 8 pro teams in Los Angeles. There's 31 music venues, skiing, the beach, shopping, red carpet events. It's busy. It's distracted. I mean, LeBron moves to town. AD moves to town. Kawhi Leonard moves to town. Paul George moves to town. The Dodgers are always good. USC is going to hire a new football coach. The reason USC is going to hire a new football coach, it doesn't matter if Clay wins or loses the rest of the season. They're not relevant. USC is on the 7th page of an 8-page sports section. They're not relevant. People just stop going in L.A. The Rams lose 2 straight games. And this past weekend, the Coliseum was all Niner fans. Think about that. 7 games ago, the Rams were in the Super Bowl. In the Super Bowl with a wizard head coach. And they go on a 2-game losing streak in the Coliseum. It might as well been a home game for the 49ers. Everybody in L.A. is like, that's nice out here. You can have my tickets. That's L.A. And New York has more hardened fans. They're less willing. Because New York, let's be honest, 6 months of the year, the weather's lousy. You don't want to go outside. But in Los Angeles, entertainment capital of the world, what do you do? Marcus Peters, I talked about it on this show, had become corrosive in the locker room. Get him out of here. Aqib Talib is hurt. And it's like, all right, we need a corner. Let's get the best one on the market. And remember, in Los Angeles, draft picks, nobody cares. They don't even care. LeBron goes to Cleveland. It's amazing. We had a Laker team full of Kuzmas and Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball, and nobody cared. Remember when Kobe Bryant signed that contract his last couple of years? He signed a huge deal, and everybody's like, it's kind of stunting the growth of all the young players. Do you know why they did that? Because Time Warner said, we're not giving you all those billions of dollars unless Kobe's on the team. We're not giving you that for Kyle Kuzma and Lonzo Ball and Julius Randle. L.A. and New York are different. Think about how big Chicago is. There are boroughs in New York bigger than Chicago. There's just too much ramifications, too much money. You got to be relevant. You know, NFL, 2 teams in L.A., 2 teams in New York, 2 baseball teams in New York, 2 baseball teams in L.A., 2 soccer teams in L.A. You got major universities. So this keeps the – they're moving into a stadium next year. It's supposed to be the world's best stadium in Los Angeles. What are you going to say? Hey, we got a bunch of draft picks. Or are you going to say, we got the best corner, best defensive lineman, we got the best this, we got the Sean McVay. They want to bring stars into that stadium. So it makes complete football sense. Are they going to pay a lot for him? Yes. But that's just the way it is. This is a highly distracted market. Two straight losses. The stadium this weekend was all 49er fans. And remember, last year the Rams went for it. They did go for it last year. Remember, they went and got Peters and Tlaib and Ndamukong Suh, and they got them to the Super Bowl. So in the Rams' eyes, it's like, yeah, this go-for-it thing works. Draft picks. Jalen Ramsey is a lot better than any first-round pick in the draft. Now, did the Rams have to give up two first-rounders and another pick? That was the market. And so, you know, Jacksonville's a small market. I mean, it's Jacksonville gets lost in Florida. Like Los Angeles, you got Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, AD, and LeBron in town. The NBA season starts in a week. What are you just going to lose this weekend and the season's over? Because I got news for you. Nobody will go to the games. That's the way LA is. Nobody will go to the games. USC is giving away tickets. So, remember when the Clippers landed Kawhi Leonard? Do you remember the comment from like Doc Rivers and Steve Ball? You know, Doc Rivers said, if we didn't land him, I was just going to take the franchise to Seattle. Like, that's how it felt. If you don't land Kawhi Leonard and the Lakers have LeBron and AD, we're invisible. We are literally lost in this city. And that's how the Rams feel. Open a new stadium. We're going to roll the dice. We need a corner anyway. Let's go get a star. Nobody in this town cares about draft picks. So sometimes in these big cities, it's not just football. It's business. The Kobe Bryant deal was business and basketball. This is business and basketball.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
51 NFL games this year, Joy, have been decided by 7 points or less. That is the most ever through week six. So there's a few really bad teams at the bottom of the league. But the top of the league, the Kansas City's, New England's, are far from unbeatable. So we do have a few more awful teams this year. Washington, Miami, and Cincinnati are awful. Oakland's been a great surprise. Chargers are worse than we thought. But as much as we talk about parity in this league, I always do, I unveil throughout the year, I always have what I call my Super Bowl bubble, and it always comes down to eight teams. And I was sitting there thinking this morning, for all the parity, for all the close games, remember, every Sunday in the NFL, parity reigns supreme, except one Sunday, Super Bowl Sunday. That's not about parity. There's a very finite number, a quarter most of the teams in the league that go in the Super Bowl. And this morning I wrote them down. I have, once again, I've got eight teams in my bubble and one close to the bubble. New England, Kansas City, Houston, Green Bay, Seattle, Philadelphia, San Francisco, and the Saints can win the Super Bowl. And Dallas, give me about three more weeks. My guess is Dallas is not a Super Bowl team. Give me about three more weeks. Colin, how can you have Philadelphia in there? Only team to beat Green Bay, beat them at Lambeau on national TV, and dominated them thoroughly, physically up front, both sides of the ball. What about Kansas City? What about Kansas City? Once they get healthy, they'll be fine. Okay, they've just been beat up. Philadelphia, Kansas City, let them get healthy. They've proven they can win big games. Carson Wentz is very good. I don't worry about Philadelphia. Good GM, good owner, good coach, good quarterback. Let him get healthy. And now there's five or six teams I think can win on any Sunday except Super Bowl Sunday. I don't see them as elite. Chicago, Minnesota, Baltimore, Buffalo, Indy, Carolina. I don't think they have the quarterback. I think they'll meet limitations. They've got a low ceiling. You need playmakers. At the end of last year, the quarterbacks that were left were Mahomes and Brady and Breeze and Goff. Goff I like a lot. So there's six teams that are good, but I don't think they can win multiple games off and on the road in the NFL playoffs. The Rams, I think their offensive line, I don't think they can fix it. Once they paid Todd Gurley, they have limitations. They opened up some money for Jalen Ramsey eventually. I just don't think they have the offensive line to win it. Todd Gurley's contract's a nightmare, and they don't have a running game. And so that's where we stand. Dallas is the one team to me. You know, if they beat Philadelphia, they go on a little three-game winning streak. I do think they have the talent. They've won divisions. I think they have the pass rush. I think they have the weapons. I think they have the running back, the offensive line. I think Jason Garrett's good enough to win a Super Bowl. I do. Dan Quinn got to a Super Bowl. Do I think Jason Garrett's as good as Dan Quinn? I do. So, and do I think, you know, again, If Philadelphia goes sideways, they win the division, they get a home game. You know, you don't have to play everybody in the NFC playoffs. You know, somebody may knock San Francisco out of it. Somebody may knock Aaron Rodgers out of it. So it's like March Madness. You don't have to play Duke to win it. You don't have to play Kentucky to win it. Sometimes they get knocked out before you face them. So eight teams in the Super Bowl bubble: New England, Kansas City, Houston, New Orleans, Green Bay, Seattle, Philadelphia, San Francisco. Give me three more weeks with the Cowboys, and I think that's where we stand today.
What's up, everybody? John Middlecoff, Three and Out Podcast. Go subscribe if you like football, because that's all I talk about, football, football, and more football. Coming up on this week's show, the referees literally ruined Monday Night Football. How do we fix it? Cowboys, Eagles, Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, Baker Mayfield, the Seattle Seahawks. I talk about it all. Three and Out Podcast with me, John Middlecoff.
Let me go to this, though. Finally, somebody said it, is that we do this blame game all the time. Is that in 2019, if you look at all the schematic changes and rule changes in the NFL, there's really no excuse to throw interceptions. I mean, Aaron Rodgers has two all year, and those were on deflections. Russell Wilson has none this year. Patrick Mahomes, who throws it constantly, has one. There's really no excuses. The rule changes now, it really is, you should be completing 65 to 66% of your throws if you have any protection on the offensive line. This is where Baker Mayfield's a problem. I'm not saying he has a great offensive line, but Sunday was a real eye-opener because he had nothing but time against Seattle to throw. They do not have a pass rush. They let Michael Bennett go. They let Frank Clark go. Seattle does a lot of things right. They do not have much of a pass rush. Russell Wilson was under far more duress than Baker Mayfield was. Look at this throw. That's a terrible throw. That's a bad decision. This throw, you know, again, that's just a bad decision throwing into people. Sunday was an eye-opener. He's got the most interceptions in the NFL right now. His passer rating's 30th, completion percentage 30th, TD percentage at 30th. It's not all on the offensive line. Russell Wilson's O-line is not great. So Freddie Kitchens finally yesterday put it back, at least to some degree, on Baker. Here it goes.
To simply answer your question, I want Baker to continue to work to make better decisions. We need to make sure Baker's continuing to get better with his eyes, his reads, his throws. But around him and me personally, I have to continue to do a better job of continuing to put him in a better situation.
So he comes and says he's got to make better decisions. This was my knock on Baker Mayfield, Johnny Manziel, and Jameis Winston out of college. I do not believe people that make bad decisions at 18 make great ones at 22. I think that most people who are mature at 12 or mature at 18, mature at 26. Now, some of us grow up, and you know, I would hope to think in my 50s I'm smarter than I was in my 20, but I wasn't a big risk taker at 20, and I'm not a big risk taker at 50. I wasn't irresponsible at 20. I'm not irresponsible at 50. I saved my money at 20. I saved my money at 50. I've made, you know, I've adjusted, but I think I'm largely kind of the same guy. Now I'm a father, didn't used to be a father. Now I'm married, didn't used to be in my 20s married. But I have kind of the same core values, same core judgment, same core instincts. You know, I work hard, I put my money away, I go to bed early. Like, most of my life has not changed. So I don't believe when you have a decision at 18 years old to listen to the police officer or run from cops, I don't think you're going to go from that to a brilliant decision maker. I don't think Jameis Winston's college nonsense, you go from that to being a great decision maker. Baker and Jameis are interception machines. In an era, you shouldn't have a ton of interceptions. You just should. And I'm not saying Jameis' O-line is great. I'm not saying Baker's O-line's great. But Baker's got real weapons. He's got a real running game, and those decisions Sunday were lousy decisions. Just like throwing at opponents and taunting opponents and handshake stuff in college and the cop video in college. Let's just be honest about it. Baker throws an interception 5.6% of the time. Do you know what Kyler Murray throws an interception? 1.7% of the time, and his offensive line is worse. And he's got a rookie head coach, and his roster's worse. So I don't want to hear about, well, he hasn't started many games. Kyler Murray is getting a ball intercepted less than 2% of the time. Patrick Mahomes has a bad offensive line and injuries, 0.4% of the time. Russell Wilson, he's been in the league 8 years, 0% of the time. So let's just put some of this on Baker. Okay, he was cocky and made dumb decisions in college. That police video, you're like, everybody did that in college. Yes. Except the smart kids who you'd want to pay $150 million to be a franchise quarterback. 99% of you are never going to run a company. So if you want to run from cops in college, be my guest. But I'm praying that the guy that's running IBM or Google or Facebook didn't do that. So franchise quarterback is not receiver, cornerback, you know, left guard. It's quarterback. Maturity matters. Judgment matters. And it's always been my issue on Baker. Jameis Winston. Snap decisions. One of the great traits of quarterback is decision making. I don't like a lot of Baker's decisions. I didn't like him in college. I don't like him now. Talent's there. That's not the question.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
New England did something. We live in a time where it's very player empowerment, pro player, and I got no problems with that. You know, college football, college basketball, guys transferring all the time. I think some of it I'm good with. I don't think, you know, you should be able to transfer as a college kid 9 times, but I have no problem you having opportunities and players being empowered, because I go to games to watch players, not coaches, GMs, and executives and scouts. But what I love about, there's a saying in Game of Thrones, bend the knee. What I love about the Patriots, they're always willing to roll the dice on guys, but they're never, ever willing to sacrifice their culture. And so Michael Bennett this week, who's talented, but Seattle's like, we're done with you. He's noisy. He can be political. He can be got into a fight with a coach, and New England's like, you're suspended. So New England will roll the dice on everybody. A.B., Albert Haynesworth, Corey Dillon, Randy Moss, Ocho Cinco. And by the way, most don't work. Corey Dillon was a big success. Randy was mostly a success. Ocho whiff, A.B. whiff, Haynesworth quadruple whiff. Bennett hasn't done anything. Frankly, they're very deep at his position now. They got a bunch of pass rushers, so they don't need him a ton. And they Chase Winovich from Michigan, they drafted. He's now getting to be a pretty good player. But what I like about New England, if I run a business, this is how I do it. I'm always willing to bring in super talented people all the time. I'll roll the dice, but I'm not sacrificing my culture for you. And New England's like, listen, you got to be more committed. You got to sacrifice more. We're not going to pay as much. We have very strict rules, and nobody gets babied, even Tom Brady. I mean, we saw the video yesterday with Joy and I. They gave him a game ball. They don't baby Brady. It's uncomfortable. And so New England runs a business like I would run a business. I would absolutely roll the dice on what are people that have a little baggage. You got to take chances. Don't be stuffy. New England takes chances every year. But they never bend a knee. They never sacrifice their culture. You can't handle it. You can't sacrifice. Boom, you're out. And I love the way they do business. I really do. I think you have to do that with any business. You have to roll the dice. You can't just sit there and be like, because, by the way, New England rolls the dice on the draft. They've whiffed on a lot of draft picks. They've whiffed on some free agent signings. But they're businesses that get big. You got to take risks, even when you're at the top, because all the companies below you are taking huge risks. The Rams are taking risks. The Eagles are taking risks. The Chiefs are taking risks. You can't sit up there on your perch and not roll the dice. New England does. But as they say in Game of Thrones, they don't bend the knee. All right, so let's bring on the voice of college football at this network, Joel Klatt. It's going to be awfully uncomfortable for Joel. Good seeing you.
What's up, dude?
Okay, so let me start with this.
Joy, I agree with you, by the way. It's more uncomfortable when we agree.
It most certainly
is, okay.
Yes.
So now that that's out of the way.
So let me start with this.
All right, where are you wrong today? Let's go.
Okay. College football, there's been a couple of changes, and I think it's made life miserable for college coaches. Number one.
In recruiting?
Now there is no February recruiting day.
Yeah.
They added a second one. I've had two coaches tell me, like, dude, you don't get a summer, you don't get a time off.
That's
now.
True.
It used to be the college lifestyle was way better than the NFL lifestyle.
That's true.
But you did it, you could control your players. The second thing is the transfer portal. Lincoln Riley's going to have his fourth quarterback in 4 years. If you don't take care of dad and the quarterback doesn't feel like he's the man, they just leave. This has made the college football, this is why, by the way, Michigan's basketball coach is like, I'm going to try the NBA. I think the college jobs, unless you have ultimate power like a Saban, it can be it's not as much fun as it was. And Jerry Jones has a history of going into the college ranks. It's the only way he's won Super Bowls. I think he knows he's going to hire Lincoln Riley. He's certainly not going to let anybody else in the NFC have Lincoln Riley. Jerry once said on the air, the biggest mistakes I've made is has gone conservative. When I go for it,
okay.
I never feel like...
All right, but this is just from Jerry's point of view.
Well, Jason Garrett, if they don't make the playoffs, he's out.
Okay.
He's gonna offer
fine.
Lincoln Riley $15 million a year.
And he might. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you never know. And Lincoln will have a choice to make. I think that there is a case to be made of why you would stay in college. Even with all the things, and listen, you're not wrong, okay? The recruiting calendar is much more tedious on the head coach now. And because of that calendar, it's actually a lot harder to take care of your current players, which make them disgruntled, which leads to the transfer portal. So they actually are one and the same, right? Yeah. They're all tied together. So, yes, that's correct. However, some guys are just better in college than they are in the NFL. And I would suggest that the exception to the rule is what Jerry has done with college coaches. And I don't really count Barry Switzer because he came into a team that was likely going to win the Super Bowl anyways.
Pete Carroll.
But Pete and Jimmy.
And Jim Harbaugh and Tom Coughlin. They were better NFL coaches.
Jim didn't win a Super Bowl.
Well, but he got to one. That's pretty darn good. He's better at San Francisco. He has been at Michigan.
I don't know about that. I mean, he's improved by like four games a year in terms of a winning margin over the six or seven previous seasons to when he was there. I would just say this, that there are a lot more guys that you're not mentioning. Lou Holtz was the Jets head coach in the 70s. That didn't work out. Butch Davis didn't work out. Nick Saban didn't work out. Steve Spurrier didn't work out. Chip Kelly didn't work out. Mike Riley didn't work out. Dennis Erickson didn't work out. I mean, you bring up a couple. Pete had an NFL background before he went to Seattle. All right, he was more of an NFL coach at USC than he was a college coach now in Seattle. I think you would agree
with that, right? That's a fair point, yeah.
Okay, so Jimmy Johnson is really the only one.
Well, Tom Coughlin had great success in the NFL.
Okay, I mean, I'll give you Tom Coughlin. I think that was in an era before what it is now.
Don't you think it's easier for a college coach to go to the pros now?
I don't know. And I think that there's a lot of other things too. Okay, so his contract, he just signed an extension. It's about $32.5 million right now. It goes through 2023. If he left right now, it'd be $4.6 million a buyout. That's a lot. Now, the contract states actually that it's 22.5% of whatever is remaining on his contract. There is a good chance that he gets another extension at the end of this year. If that goes north of 50, which it probably will in terms of total contract value, that means that the 22.5% that's already the precedent for him as his buyout, he'd be in the north of $21 million. You know, I mean, like
Dallas Cowboy head coach.
I understand that, but think about it now. He's got total control of Oklahoma. He's got the ability to raise his family. He's got two young daughters and his wife and Norman. Well, I think that plays a huge. That's why David Shaw hasn't left.
Well, they don't have nice houses also, in Dallas.
He can get a nice house in Dallas, but you've also got this point. And the reason I bring up the $21 million is because he's likely going to continue to get extensions to the point where he's going to make somewhere in the $100 million range over 10 years
in the Big 12. Or make same money in the NFL.
He's also not accomplished everything that he wants to accomplish at Oklahoma.
Got a transfer portal in the NFL? Got to have to recruit in the NFL and deal with goofy boosters and NCAA?
I tell you what. You go beat Chip Kelly, and it doesn't work out, which the percentages suggest, Lincoln, and I'm going to talk to you and get the bonehead out of here. I'm going to talk to you right now. Lincoln, let's say it doesn't work out. Okay, you go and you like roll the dice and it doesn't work out. What job are you going to go back and get?
At $100 million, who cares?
Who cares? You know, because it's so easy to bring UCLA back, as we're proving right now.
Hey, Lincoln.
What job are you going to go get? You're in a blue blood job right now.
Okay,
in a blue blood job right now. You don't have to leave anywhere. Nick Saban is the model. Bob Stoops was the model. You can stay there. You can make more money than God, and you're just fine.
Okay, now let's get camera guys. Put it on me, and let me talk to Lincoln Riley.
Oh, like the other 3 hours.
Yeah, you want to stay at a Days Inn in El Paso another 38 times in your life? Or you want to go to Ritz-Carlton with Jerry Jones? Have martinis on Saturday night? Hey, Lincoln. What sounds better, Lincoln Riley?
Hey, swing the camera over here.
No,
okay, now you're
camera's
in the
broken.
Room. Now you're in the draft room, and now all of a sudden you're like, hey, I really like this player. Now you got to deal with Steven and Jerry and all these yahoos are saying, no, we don't want that guy.
Okay,
you're like, what?
Put the camera over here.
I lost all my autonomy. Okay. Now I'm no longer the in control of my own program.
And
good luck with that.
All right, camera over here.
I'm the president of Oklahoma. Academics are so important. This player, we're not going to let him in because
Swing it back. I'm the president of Oklahoma now, and guess what I just gave you? Another $32.5 million in extension. By the way, you've got 35 hours of private plane usage. You can play at any one of our three golf clubs whenever you want. So I'll take care of you, Lincoln, and guess what I'm not going to do? I'm not going to ask you to draft a player that you don't want to draft.
Yeah, whatever. All right, let's move to this.
Gosh.
Okay.
Joy, it feels good when I beat
I feel
him
like I should have jumped in there, like, swing it over here.
Yeah, Joy, what was your...
Hey,
Joy,
hey,
I would
Lincoln,
like your take.
Do whatever's best for you.
Yeah!
Dallas, four seasons, lived next to Jerry, cowboy coach.
I agree with that.
All right, so here's the other thing. I'm hearing
Caitlin
all this.
Caitlin and his wife. Caitlin, keep him in, Norman.
Here's what's funny. So there's only one team that can beat Alabama this year. LSU.
Why only one?
LSU gives up too many cheap touchdowns. Georgia can't throw it over the top.
You think Alabama doesn't give up cheap touchdowns this year? They've got all those true freshmen starting on defense. I think that they're likely to get into a shootout. This is not Alabama of a couple of years ago. This is a team that's having to win one way. They don't run it like they used to. They don't play defense like they used to, namely because of injuries and a lot of young players playing. But they're leaning on Tua. This is more Oklahoma of last year than it is Alabama of last year.
Do you know Fox Bet says if LSU and Bama played, Bama's favored by almost 11 points?
Well, Fox Bet is new. They're working through their kinks. I just don't think that that's a very good line whatsoever. I think LSU has a great
LSU
chance in that game.
LSU was in trouble against Florida at home.
Yeah, and Florida's a pretty good football team.
Pretty good. Not Alabama. They're pretty good.
Alabama's great. Alabama's great. I still think they're going to win the SEC, but to think that they're just going to waltz through like they have in the last couple of years, I think is troublesome.
Okay, so you watch this. So Klatt has his top 10, and this cracks me up.
Why does this crack you up?
Okay, so
put it up.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You have Clemson 7th. Folks, let me tell you what Clemson is. You know what Clemson is?
Florida State of 14?
No. They're Pete Carroll's USC Trojans.
Why is that?
Because Clemson wins last year. Clemson's in a bad conference. When Pete was in the Pac-12, it was garbage.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
Okay, the ACC now is garbage. Yeah. Miami's garbage. Florida State's garbage. Virginia Tech's not what it was with the great coach.
Only one ranked team. That's Clemson, by the way. So American has more ranked
teams. So Clemson now with Trevor Lawrence and Dabo in a bad conference.
Okay.
They are bored out of their mind.
Maybe.
Pete's teams in the Pac-12 won a title. They came out the following year. They couldn't get up for anybody in the conference. Clemson is just sitting back here,
maybe
waiting for Alabama, and they're going to crush them again.
Listen, it might be, and they might win a national championship, and they might go 15-0.
They're bored out of their mind.
Lord knows they're not going to get tested in the ACC. I think that you would,
would the championship game be against today?
Maybe. Oh gosh.
I mean, seriously.
Every team in the Coastal has two losses.
Yes.
One of them in the ACC. So it's a total crapshoot. By the way. Whoever wins it, it's likely to be the seventh different winner in the last 7 years on that side.
I think we're falling for this. Is that?
Yeah, but hold on. Have they been impressive at all?
Well, again, they're sleepwalking through this schedule.
So do you want me to rate them higher just because of your theory? Or
no.
Do you want me to rate teams based on what I've seen on the field?
Well, no, but I think everything has to be considered. Years ago, Florida won a national basketball title.
Why should I consider their national championship from a year ago?
Well, why not
just evaluate teams for what they are in this season?
Well, time out. Don't we have a preseason poll? It's totally based on last year.
Why would I care about a preseason poll whatsoever? We've already seen that those have proven to be totally wrong. Wisconsin and Penn State weren't thought of to be very much at all, and now here they are clearly in the top 10 right now. I think Clemson's a really good football team. They have not played to their potential. If you put any other emblem out there outside of Clemson or Alabama and you said, here's this team, and they have come out and they've played far below expectations and have just a one-point win over a middling team with a first-year head coach. Let's say it's Ohio State. Let's say Ohio State this year would have come out, played below expectations, and had a one-point win against Indiana. You'd be crushing them, and rightly so. And rightly so. So, Clemson comes out, plays below expectations. They might go undefeated. They're probably going to go to the playoff because of their conference. But to put them or evaluate them outside of what they have actually done, I think is troublesome.
By the way, ask Nick Saban today who he's afraid of. He doesn't want to face Lincoln Riley, and he doesn't want to face Trevor Lawrence.
Maybe. So great about this season is that it's not just two teams that are clearly better than everybody else. I think that we've got seven teams that are clearly national championship contenders. In particular, after we saw OU's defense last week, actually stand up and play great defense against Texas.
You have Oklahoma this week. West Virginia's at Oklahoma. By the way, Oklahoma may very well come down after these massive rivalry games. It's very common. Oklahoma may come back down a little bit.
Maybe.
Okay, so let's go to this thing. So can I throw another one of my brilliant theories out there?
I mean, you've been wrong a couple of times today, so keep going.
So,
keep on trucking.
Okay. So, Joel Klatt, for those on radio that can't see him, if you're wondering who's consistently wrong. So, I believe...
You're wondering the only person out here giving facts and not theories. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, whatever. So, here's the thing, is that we tend to assume that if you go from college to pro, you're just starting to become a good football player. But as
player
we,
side, okay.
Right. Okay. But a lot of times, the coaching you get at college is better than the pro. And sometimes if you're a 3 or 4 year starter, the truth is you were more mature. You figured the playback book out early in college. You get well coached. You get all these college starts in. But by the time you get to the NFL, this is the ceiling. Like Alabama, a lot of times Saban squeezes every ounce of juice out of the orange. And by the time you get an Alabama player in the NFL, you're like, well, what he was in college is what he is.
So what's the theory?
Marcus Mariota got 3-year starter in college, great college offensive coaching.
Great player.
Never got better after his rookie year in the NFL. Never got better. He entered as a ceiling. I'll give you an example.
So are you saying this as a rule now? You just think
players, specifically
Marcus?
Kyler Murray, 1 year of college football. I've watched him improve in 3 games.
No. You can't. This is very revisionist history right now. You're more wrong on this than anything so far today. All you have to do is go back to the last 9 quarterbacks that have won a Super Bowl. And I've given you this stat before, and I'm not surprised it went in 1 year and out the other. This 9 Super Bowl winning quarterbacks since Brad Johnson. Okay.
Yeah.
And on average, when you look at their college career, they've started 34 games in college, attempted 1,200 passes, completed 730 of them, have 71 touchdowns with about 23 wins. The rule is, if you're going to get a quarterback that's going to go into the NFL and actually be a Super Bowl winning quarterback, you want the experience. In fact, the fewest number of starts in college for a quarterback that's won a Super Bowl is Aaron Rodgers with 22, and I believe that's not even counting his junior college starts. So he's gotten more reps than even those statistics suggest. Brady is on the low end of that because he shared time at Michigan as a starting quarterback. I completely disagree. You want as much time as you possibly can. But that's why Daniel Jones is having a lot of success. This is why Haskins is having to sit. It's because he only played for 1 year.
I think that's
a total misconception. The reason Marcus Mariota has not gotten better is because he's had a different offense every year. Mike Shanahan used to say, and I think he's absolutely right, and he got this from Bill Walsh, a quarterback in the National Football League only reaches full potential if he's in an offense for the same offense in 3 separate seasons. Okay, you're only using that offense to its fullest capability once you get into that 3rd year. Mike Shanahan used to say that all the time, and I firmly believe that. Why is Marcus Mariota not developed? Because he's had a revolving door of offensive coordinators.
What about Andy Dalton? That guy just came into the league. You'd seen what he was. He entered the league at a ceiling.
So you're going to base your entire theory
Baker
off
Mayfield.
Andy Dalton and Baker Mayfield, who's still in his – by the way, Baker has only started a hair over 16 games. It's like he's still a first-year player at this point. He'll continue to get better. Hmm. I gave you the 9 Super Bowl-winning quarterbacks. I speak from rings on the fingers.
Yeah. Well, that's how you see it.
That's how everyone sees it.
Do you want those numbers again? Maybe
34 career starts on average, Colin. 1,200 attempts, 730 completions, 71 touchdowns, and 23 wins. With a completion percentage right around 63%.
Because I watch Sam Darnold, and I watch Kyler Murray, and I'm like, these kids are getting better every week. I watch Baker, and I'm like, 4 years of college, this is what he is, a turnover machine. Andy Dalton, Marcus Mariota, Baker Mayfield, all these 4 years.
Do you know how many turnovers Baker had in college?
Yeah, nobody throws an interception at Oklahoma because Lincoln Riley is Elon Musk. He's a genius. All these Oklahoma quarterbacks, Jalen Hurts got benched. Now he's the best player in college football.
I just love that you're basing a theory after Andy Dalton and Marcus Mariota and not the 9 quarterbacks who have won Super Bowls since Brad Johnson.
All right, let's see if I have anything else here. I got the Lincoln Riley thing, the starts in college thing. Ed Orgeron, I'm very happy for Ed. I doubted him. He's been a home run.
He's been a home run. And by the way, if you don't know, the biggest move in college football to date was when Ed Orgeron hired Joe Brady to be his passing game coordinator. He was an assistant coach with the New Orleans Saints.
Yes.
He came in, has revamped that passing game of LSU, and that's been the biggest thing that I think that we've gotten in college football is LSU.
And I never thought Ed Orgeron was a Power 5 juggernaut coach. He was too quirky for me. But you know what?
It's a good fit down there.
And LSU, he is a great fit.
Yep.
He is LSU football.
We agree.
I don't know if he works anywhere else, but at LSU, Ed Orgeron is LSU football.
Well, if he talks at a press conference or at a booster club, they understand him. Everybody else is like, come again?
He edited a sideline thing this weekend that everybody on Twitter was laughing about. I had to watch it four times. I couldn't understand. He's just
We just played really well. We just played really well. I'm very proud of Joe Burrow.
All right, Joel Klatt. Let's hear it for Joel Klatt. He was right a couple times.
Couple.